Well, it's the battle between old and new, friends, between the strong and the weak, brash versus sly, sneaky versus honest, cheaters versus the rule abiders. And who am I talking about? Of the Super Bowl, of course. Who are you taking? I have to admit that it seems to me that the Carolina Panthers are overwhelming favorites in this game, and I'm not saying that to try to stir up the antagonism, the bad feelings of any Broncos, because I really think I'd like to see the Broncos win. Of course I would. They're right next door here, but it just seems to me that this team is really just running on all cylinders. So I think it's going to be a pretty good game. The oldest quarterback to ever start a game. Who would have thought that he'd beat Tom Brady, speaking of cheaters? And who would have thought that you would have such an overwhelming experience coming up to this game from the Panthers? I mean, the Panthers were a team that was talented, and I don't know what else you could call them. I mean, they're talented, but the quarterback was immature. He had as many bad games as good games. The running back never seemed to be able to stay healthy. They had a pretty good defense, and then it all seemed to click for him. Now, when Denver took Peyton Manning, did you think that was a mistake? Because when he came in, his neck was broken, right, supposedly, or whatever. And yet this is the second Super Bowl, right? And you look over at Indianapolis, and they've got Andrew Luck, who's a kind of a young stud, and he's had a lot of health problems. He missed half the year with a kidney contusion or whatever. And Indianapolis just simply has not had the success that the Panthers have had. And, you can say that it's because, Peyton and the Broncos have had a great defense, but they've scored a lot of points. And Peyton is not the player that he used to be, but he's still going to the Super Bowl. Here's a little bit from ESPN, and we are going to get into this debate and a few other stories for you today as well on this 5th of February. It is cold out there, by the way. I mean, I hope you don't mind me saying that, but it is 26 degrees. It feels cold. I don't know. 26 and clear. The real feel is 22 because the wind is about 6 miles an hour. Humidity is 34%. So it just, I don't know. I didn't really want to get out of bed, but here we go. Here's a little bit from ESPN on what you need to know about Super Bowl 50.
Is here, and we have so many questions. We need to know why nobody likes Cam Newton, even though, well, we can't really find anybody who doesn't like Cam Newton. We need to know whether this really is Peyton Manning's last rodeo. And if so, what's next? A hoedown? A fish fry? A hoot nanny? What exactly does one do after one's last rodeo? So many questions a mere football game can't answer. How does Luke Kuechly fit all of that hair under his helmet? Whatever happened to that great box hat Von Miller wore? Remember the one that had feet? What exactly is Josh Norman talking about? And why doesn't it seem he'll ever stop? Of course, Sunday brings the actual game, lest we forget. And then we get to find out whether Denver's defense can stop Cam, whether Carolina's defense can wreck Peyton's send-off, and how many kids with Panthers jerseys can get front row seats at the Super Bowl. But after 5 months of previews and touchdowns and heartbreak and thrills, the biggest question is the one we don't want to ask. After this is over, what are we going to do without football?
All right, so this is just a little preview. It looks like both teams
all my
are fairly
years
healthy.
Believing you.
And, too bad that the presidential race is not as easy to solve as the NFL. This year, and there have been games that they set for thrones.
Can anybody
introducing the all-new Ridge Patriots.
The only truck with an available truck bed audio system.
a new truck. To
you know what? Tom Brady turn around like a rag doll.
Super Bowl.
All right, here's a little preview on the teams coming into the game.
50 is just days away, and the Broncos' two starting safeties, they're tackling injuries left over from the AFC title fight. I'm Adrian Lawrence, joined by ESPN NFL analyst Ryan Clark. Ryan, let's talk about the safeties. We have T.J. Ward. He re-injured his left ankle. Darian Stewart, knee sprain. Kubiak limited them in practice, but he says they're going to play. You know the position well. Yeah. What is the Broncos thinking in terms of evaluating whether to play injured players?
Well, call me biased, but safeties are the toughest players on the field. When you look at that position, I just feel like they yield both the most attractive and toughest in the NFL. But seriously, listen, Darian Stewart and T.J. Ward have been huge to this team's success. They've also played snaps without both of those guys. And so coming into this game, it's not whether or not we're going to play these guys. If they can go, they go. There's no next week. There's no tomorrow. You have to have your best 11 players on the field and available to try to beat the Carolina Panthers, who are scoring points at an amazing clip right now. Talked to TJ. He said he's going to be ready to go. Darian's a little more iffy on how well he'll be able to play, how much he'll heal. But I expect both of these guys to give it a go on Sunday and for them to play well.
Now, Denver finished number one this season, total defense, first time in franchise history. But they've got these injuries with their secondary. How are they going to have to perform and really go at it on Sunday in order to keep that number one caliber going?
Well, the first thing you can do is maybe try to lock Cam in a bathroom or a closet or something, and maybe he misses a quarter or two.
All right, this is silly. Here's another preview for you. This is Barnwell's Super Bowl preview. And but, you know, I mean, you're going to have banged up players at the end of the game, but both teams are fairly healthy. It would have been interesting to see the Patriots versus the, you know, the Panthers, but I guess this is a transition, and they're talking about Cam being the new face, you know, new face of the league, which is fair, but a lot of people are put off by how brash he is and how he does his little dance, his little dab dance, but it was cute when he came out with the shirt with his kid's face on it. All right, here we go. Bill Barnwell's Super Bowl preview.
After dominating the Patriots and knocking down Tom Brady a combined 11 times during the AFC Championship game, Denver's dominant duo of Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware will have their hands full with the Panthers in Super Bowl 50. Carolina does more to confuse and freeze edge rushers than anybody else in football. The Panthers can overwhelm even the league's best defenses with misdirection, especially out of the shotgun. When Cam Newton is under center, the Panthers average 2.8 yards per carry, which is 30th in the league. Out of the shotgun, though, Carolina averaged 5.9 yards per rush attempt, the second best figure in football. Newton's offense also sells out in protection to try and create big plays. The Panthers go with 7 or more blockers on an NFL high 17.1% of pass attempts, which is more than twice the league average. The only problem? The Broncos have allowed a QBR of just 26.2 on those throws this year, the third best rate in football. Denver's solution may be to flip some of the trends which led Carolina to a league high 500 points this season. The Panthers face the league's easiest schedule of defenses, had the NFL's second best average starting field position, had the best red zone offense in football, and threw in 5 defensive touchdowns before adding 2 more pick sixes during the playoffs. After forcing a league high 39 takeaways during the regular season, the Panthers' D has chipped in with 9 more during the postseason. And while Peyton Manning threw interceptions
important
in his first 9 starts before going down with a foot
please
injury.
Call.
Anyway, trying to bring up YouTube there and some stupid should have known better. We've got 2 teams. I just don't see how you don't put your bet on the Carolina Panthers. They're playing at such a high level, offense and defense, and I don't see how you get around it. Anyway, let's take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk about a little bit of the debate. Kelly O'Connor, 616, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450. We'll be right back. All right. So the debate last night, I guess I better get into that for just a second, although it is painful to think about Hillary debating. Why? Because of her voice. It's like the metallic sound of a robot. Well, we all know it is, but I wonder why her voice is like that. Some people say she's going deaf. Other people say they only wish she would go deaf, which isn't very nice to say. But for Hillary, you might want to make an exception. But, you know, doesn't this feel like the craziest presidential race you've ever been around? It goes from what's the old saying? Napoleon III. It's only a few steps from magnificence to absurdity. Something like that. All right. A few little clips here for you. I hate to play these, though. I feel like I might be my brain might be fatally compromised. Here is Hillary Clinton. Not everyone who takes donations is bought, Mr. Artful Smear.
Needed in this country for the middle class and working families.
Yeah, but I think it's fair to really ask what's behind that comment. You know, Senator Sanders has said he wants to run a positive campaign. I've tried to keep my disagreements over issues, as it should be. But time and time again, by innuendo, by insinuation, there is this attack that he is putting forth, which really comes down to, you know, anybody who ever took donations or speaking fees from any interest group has to be bought. And I just absolutely reject that, Senator. And I really don't think these kinds of attacks by insinuation are worthy of you. And enough is enough. If you've got something to say, say it directly. But you will not find that I ever changed a view or a vote because of any donation that I ever received. And I have stood up and I have represented my constituents to the best of my ability. And I'm very proud of that. So I think it's time to end the very artful smear that you and your campaign have been carrying out in recent weeks. And let's talk about the issues. I worked hard for McCain-Feingold. I want to reverse Citizens United.
Let's talk about issues.
Could you imagine running into Hillary Clinton somewhere, not knowing who she was, and then having her go off on a harangue? Oh, my God. You'd fall down with a heart attack. She is a mythological beast. She needs to work in a call center and really be the last option, you know, like the Yankees used to go to their closer. What was that guy's name? Rivera, with 99 mile an hour, wicked tailing fastball. Hillary needs to be the last person that anybody ever talks to. Because once you talk to Hillary, you don't ever want to talk to another people. All right, here's another clip. Oh, and this is Clinton has entire establishment behind her from Sanders, and Hillary says, I can't be establishment because I'm a woman.
Secretary Clinton, you know, the person who first put out the idea of a 50-state party strategy is former Governor Howard Dean, who's with us tonight. And I'm very proud and grateful to have the support of so many elected Vermonters and former officials, two former governors, the current governor, the current other senator. I really appreciate that. And I think it's because they've worked with me. They've seen what I do. They know what a kind of a colleague I am. They want me as their partner in the White House, and that's exactly what I will do. We'll get things done together. Democrats, Republicans, independents, we're going to make progress together when I'm president.
I want to vomit.
Secretary Clinton is raising the issue of endorsements by your home state Democrats. She's implying that that says something about the people who know you best?
Well, I don't see it quite like that. I will absolutely admit that Secretary Clinton has the support of far more governors, mayors, members of the House. She has the entire establishment behind her. That's a fact. I don't deny it. But I am pretty proud that we have over 1 million people who have contributed to our campaign, averaging $27 a piece, that we have had meetings where 25,000-30,000 people have come out, that our campaign is a campaign of the people, by the people, and for the people. So, Rachel, yes, Secretary Clinton does represent the establishment. I represent, I hope, ordinary Americans, and by the way, who are not all that enamored with the establishment, but I am very proud to have people like Keith Ellison and Raul Grijalva in the House, the co-chairman of the House Progressive Caucus.
Well, look, I've got to just jump in here because, honestly, Senator Sanders is the only person who I think would characterize me, a woman running to be the first woman president, as exemplifying the establishment. And I've got to tell you that it's really quite amusing to me. People support me because they know me. They know my life's work. They have worked with me, and many have also worked with Senator Sanders. And at the end of the day, they endorse me because they know I can get things done. I am not going to make promises I can't keep. I am not going to talk about big ideas like single payer and then not level with people about how much it will cost. A respected health economist said that these plans...
I can't take it. I just filled 3 air sickness bags. I'm not kidding. Or at least 4. What is... I don't know. All right, so we got to take an unbelievable clip to play for you. I just don't know when to do it. Let me... you know what? I'm going to play it right now. This is from Alex Jones. This is one of the greatest things that I've ever heard in my life. All right, let's take a break first. I want to take a little break here, and then we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. We'll be right back. You're going to love this when you hear Alex Jones get into this.
All right, so we were talking about Hillary's voice. Peggy Noonan, the great speechwriter,
Hillary's voice is harassing to the ear. I think that's a great way to put it. And I got a little clip here for you. This is, check this out.
I know that we can finish the job of universal health care coverage for every single man, woman, and child. I know we can combat climate change and be the clean energy superpower of the 21st century. I know we can make our education system work for every one of our children, especially those who come with disadvantages.
Imagine listening to that for 8 years. Check this out, Alex Jones. You're going to love this one.
And now Hillary Clinton has come out saying Trump's playing right in the hands of ISIS. No, who played in the hands of ISIS was Hillary Clinton at the State Department 4.5 years ago that gave him the Stinger missiles, the heavy weapons, the TOW missiles, and continues to do so, hoping the public stays ignorant about that, which is not happening. But here is Hillary claiming that Trump's playing into their hands, blowing up their oil trucks that they're selling and making money with Turkey.
Instead of showing leadership, some candidates in this race are resorting to ugly, hateful rhetoric. Donald Trump, the Republican front runner, has made a name for himself in the last month by trafficking in prejudice and paranoia. His latest insult is his call to stop all Muslims from entering the United States. This is both a shameless and a dangerous idea. At a time when America should be doing everything we can to lead the fight to defeat ISIS and other radical jihadists, Donald Trump is playing right into their hands.
See how she talks like a robot to people? You will do as I say. Your planet is under my control. How dare Donald Trump want to close the borders? I am the leader of ISIS, Hillary Clinton. Our destabilizing force is being defeated by those pesky Russians. Excuse me, just a moment. I was having a malfunction. My truth chip was activated. Excuse me. Donald Trump is bad. He's with ISIS. I'm good. You can trust me. How'd they get those missiles? Gee, better take your rights away and your guns.
Don't run. We are your friends.
Don't run. We are your friends.
Yeah, they say that Hillary normally goes around and talks whatever accent. If she's in New York, she'd be like, it's good to be here with you today. My name is Don Corleone. Or if she's out in California to a Latino crowd, she will literally go, hello, good to be here with you. And then if she's in Kentucky, she's cut back because of press coverage of this, but when she was in Kentucky, it was the best. Good to be here today. I appreciate you. Aw, man. And they start talking like a donkey or something. Starting going, eaw. I mean, literally, can we find her in Kentucky? I ain't been nowhere, dumb girl. I mean, can you imagine if you went and spoke to a bunch of coal miners in Kentucky? And, I mean, sure, they have a thick accent, kind of like, yeah, how you doing there? And then you went, hi, I'm Alex Jones. I talk with a Texas accent, but instead I'm going to go, good to be here with you. I mean, who would buy into that? Or if I showed up to, say, a Hispanic group in Mexico and went, hello, good to see you. I mean, it is so insulting. And then now she just talks in robot voice. I am Hillary Clinton. Your planet is ours. Hand over your women. I love them.
Welcome to ChairCast.
Jamie, I'm delighted to be here. I love sitting here and rocking. So thanks for giving me.
I've got actually that was I heard that last night and laughed till I cried. The accents that Alex Jones was using, but I've got a clip of Hillary going through. Well, I could either get the laughter, the crazy laughter that she does when she doesn't want to answer a question, which at times is so inappropriate, it's astounding. But here is a little accent evolution from Hillary. I hope you Hillary lovers don't mind that I'm kicking her to the curb right now. 5, 2, 3, 4, 2, 50. This is from Bloomberg Business, Accent Evolution, Hillary style.
We're talking about accents. Everyone has one, even if you don't think you do. And some of us have more than one, like Hillary Clinton.
It was really silly. I'm glad nobody was around. And
her accents have fluctuated a lot.
The road to being somebody in this society starts with education.
Yes, that's Hillary in 1983. It's hard to tell whether she's pandering to her audience or just mimicking the people around her. That's not a...
Wait a minute. Is there a difference between pandering to your audience and mimicking the people around you?
Unusual. And lots of other politicians have done the same thing. But with Hillary, we have 3 decades of multi-regional public life to sift through. Let's go back to that 1983 clip.
Start with education. Education.
Even though she's from Illinois, she did marry a guy from Arkansas. So it's not unreasonable that that would affect her speech. That inland southern accent, though, it starts to fade just 4 years later.
It is difficult to draw the line between personal privacy, family privacy. But I think as a society, we've had more than enough examples.
There's a twang, but it's on its way out. The weird thing is that that accent returns in 1992 when Bill Clinton is running for president.
You know, they've just been minding their own business and they got hit by a meteor. You know, I'm not sitting here as some little woman standing by my man like Tammy Wynette. Every time she called distraught saying her life was going to be ruined, ruined, ruined.
But through the 90s, Hillary discards her drawl.
I think that is exactly where it goes. Right there in the middle on the top. Good. Great, Martha.
Side note, there are several Martha Stewart White House specials from the 90s, and all of them are amazing. Anyway, by the middle of the decade, the Illinois native starts to sound a touch Midwestern.
Questions come up, and we'll just keep doing our best to answer them, and hopefully it'll end at some point. I think that's only natural.
By the time she ran for Senate in 2000, Hillary Clinton, the Chicagoan by way of Arkansas and Washington, D.C., had to appeal to New Yorkers.
When I started this campaign, I'm not sure I knew quite what to expect. Lifting up our children with better education.
Education.
Education. I hope you'll give me that chance.
Was that a hint of the Northeast?
Long-term care.
Do I detect a subtle long-term care? So there's no strong accent here. But maybe the absence of an accent is in itself an accent. Let's skip ahead to 2007.
You know, I happen to think that it is just totally off base. It's, you know, so far out, it's hard to even understand and take seriously. But what people are talking to me about is not that, I got to tell you.
The chop and the G's at the ends of the gerunds, we're almost past the heartland into Sarah Palin territory. Seriously, though, it does sound like Hillary Clinton gets ever so slightly folksier when she's running a presidential campaign.
Charlotte had, whether they're living in rural Iowa or inner city New York or anywhere else.
Obviously, she isn't the first person.
Hillary's a fraud. That's Bloomberg there. So that's not from some right-wing site, but same guy that wants to run for president. Now, here's a few concluding clips for you, just so you have something to have a nightmare about. A couple of, maybe last week or so, Frankie was getting Hillary ready for handcuffs. I wonder what he feels about her today. Here she's talking about the Benghazi.
Do you disagree with me that a simple phone call to those evacuees to determine what happened wouldn't have ascertained immediately that there was no protest? I mean, that was a piece of information that could have been easily obtained.
Well, but Senator,
within hours, if not days.
Senator, when you're in these positions, the last thing you want to do is interfere with any other process.
Well, I realize that's a good excuse.
Number two, it's the fact. Number two, I would recommend highly you read both what the ARB said about it and the classified ARB, because even today there are questions being raised. Now, we have no doubt they were terrorists, they were militants, they attacked us, they killed our people. But what was going on and why they were doing what they were doing?
No. We were misled that there were supposedly protests and then something sprang out of that, an assault out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But
and the American people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
And here she goes.
Due respect, The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
What difference does it make?
It is our
What difference does it make? You remember that? And here we go. Here's the walk-off home run, drop the mic one.
I am sick and tired of people who say that if you debate and you disagree with this administration, somehow you're not patriotic. And we should stand up and say we are Americans and we have a right to debate and disagree with any administration.
All right. We'll take a break on the hour, and I'll be back. And then I've got the GOP calling in at 7:45. We'll be right back. Kelly Cunningham, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. What difference does it make? All right, so it's 7:06 on the 5th of February, and a little bit chilly out there. I've got the temperature at 28 degrees right now. And they had a pretty wicked snowstorm up in, I think they had something like 41 inches in Nebraska or whatever. Snow drifts that were 12 feet high or whatever. It kind of passed through, but this El Nino has really put a lot of water and snow and rain and everything over us in the last year. All right, so well, I've got a break of pace here. 14 new tarantula species found in the United States. And this is from Newsweek.com. Among the 14 new species is Aphanopelma johnnycashi, named after guess who, Johnny Cash. Since it's all black and lives in the hills near Folsom Prison, that's pretty good. And, wow, 14 new species. So I was walking down the street and near the cemetery that is between Main Street and Valley off of Loman and street? Let's say Armando, but it's not Armando, but you know what I'm talking about. And that little cemetery over there, and out of the cemetery, I'm not kidding, walks a very large tarantula. I was totally blown away. So maybe it was there visiting a deceased friend. It was probably 2 years ago. It was during the time when it was raining a lot. All right. So of the 13 other species, 8 are miniature tarantulas, some smaller than the size of a quarter. And Inge Agnarsson, a biologist at the University of Vermont, says this study is phenomenal in its scope, setting a new standard. Never before has so much data been gathered by so few. So these tarantulas are very difficult to find, according to experts. And they spent hundreds of hours driving in darkened, unmade roads in search of males as well as females in their burrows. So Four of the new discovered species hail from the Sky Islands region of southeastern Arizona and southwestern New Mexico, which has one of the highest levels of biodiversity in the country, and where, incidentally, the country's only wild jaguar was recently spotted on film. I saw a picture of this thing. It's absolutely beautiful. And they found this thing in the mountains outside of Tucson, and that, you know, they've got a collar on it. So anyway, kind of an interesting scientific note there. Now, oh, and in other science news, they're asking if they should stop, if biologists should stop grouping people by race. Which I'll get into in just a moment. But first, let me get into the story that's kind of been on my mind for a while, which is an unbelievable story about the supposed new government policy by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agents, by ICE and Homeland Security. Border agent, we might as well abolish our immigration laws together. Border agents have been told to stand down. So, I mean, we're not even pretending to try to stop these people anymore. Here's a little clip from the Washington Examiner.
As tens of thousands of children fleeing violence in Central America cross the border in search of safe harbor, overwhelmed U.S. officials weakened child protection policies, placing some young migrants in homes where they were sexually assaulted, starved, or forced to work for little or no pay. Without enough beds to house the record numbers of young arrivals, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services lowered its safety standards during border surges in the last 3 years to swiftly move children out of government shelters and into sponsors' homes. Federal officials won't disclose details of how the agency was stretched so thin, but say they are strengthening the procedures as the numbers of young migrants once again is on the rise, and recently signed a contract to open new shelters.
All right, so related to that, but the idea is that, okay, so how much time is left before the president leaves? And he's got about a year left. And less than a year. And so he's going to do whatever he can to, I guess, I mean, there's no other way to categorize this guy. He is opposed to the country that we have now, and therefore wants to change the law, either the law or the practice of America. And the way that you do that is by changing the law, or in the case of the president, who doesn't seem to have a lot of faith either in the Congress or in his ability to persuade people, funny enough, even though he was called the greatest speaker of all time, the greatest speaker of his age, he doesn't seem to be persuading people to come over, in part because he doesn't really try to, because one of the things that you carry as a progressive is the idea that you're in a huge minority and that you have to use the levers of government. The reason these people are so pro-government isn't because they're in favor of law and order. It has nothing to do with that. It's because they know that they need someone to help them bring their ideas in. They're elites. They believe that their ideas are apples and oranges different. They understand and believe them because they're smarter and better than other people. And therefore, the masses can't understand where they're coming from and won't be able to because they're not educated into it. They don't have the natural ability. They're not intelligent enough. They're not good people. And therefore, the government has to be used to force these people to change. You and me, the people on the street that don't agree with this stuff. And therefore, and that's why that's what I believe has been at the root of Obama's entire approach to government. He carries along with him as a former community organizer, the idea of dividing and conquer, cause a distraction, cause a crisis, and then use that crisis to ramp up government power. So you can eventually use the government to force people to change. So, anyway, I'm going to get into the story a little bit more, and but I got to bring you some more Tom Scott here. Unbelievable song from New York Connection, Uptown and Country. Kelly O'Connell, 714 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. We'll be right back to get into this juicy story. There is a change in policy. There is a change in policy at immigration. And if you're an immigration agent, if you're a Border Patrol agent, you know anything about this, please feel free to call in. But what's happening is, according to this article from the Washington Examiner, U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents are being told to release illegal immigrants and no longer order them to appear at deportation hearings. All right, when they catch these people, and this is according to congressional testimony, they're catching these people and they're asking them basically, do you have a felony? Do you have a serious crime in your background? If the person says no, which everybody's going to say, right? Then they're going to release them, and they're not going to give them an NTA, a notice to appear, which the Border Patrol agents jokingly refer to as notices to disappear, because more than half of these people, and according to my other research, over 90% of the people that are given these notices don't ever show up. Now, in addition to this, they're not being tracked. So they're not being tracked. And they're being not given notices to appear in court. So basically, when these people come over here, whether they're apprehended or not, they get to stay. So in effect, Obama has canceled border law, immigration law. He's just totally canceled it. And there's a gentleman who was testifying in front of the Congress. Brandon Judd, president of the National Border Patrol Council, said that the administration was embarrassed at how few people show up to these hearings. And so he says this, quote, the willful failure to show up for court appearances by persons that were arrested and released by the Border Patrol has become an extreme embarrassment for the Department of Homeland Security. It's become so embarrassing that DHS and the U.S. Attorney's Office has come up with a new policy. And I'll tell you about that policy in a second. We have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Why are we paying the Border Patrol guys then?
I don't know. I'm sure they're frustrated. I mean, can you imagine being hired to do a job that's involving security and then told don't to bother with it? I mean, why would they stop anybody if they have to let them go anyway?
So we're giving them a truck and gas to drive around all day and do nothing?
Well, you know, a lot of these people, like these kids, they take them. They're moving them into Fort Bragg, or Fort whatever. They're putting them into military installations here. So the government is officially, according to the law, supposed to stop these people and keep them from coming into the country or send them back. Instead of that, we're using federal facilities to house them in.
Yeah, that's pretty sad, huh?
Well, I mean, what possible long-term good is going to come out of this policy? Even if in the short term you say we're a great country, we take in all the the suffering, the poor, the whatever the Statue of Liberty says, you know?
Yeah, you know, as broke as the country is right now, I just don't see how that can be the right thing to do.
It cannot possibly. So we got to get this guy out of office. Thank God that these are administrative policies as opposed to law, that the president can go in there and just turn the, you know, throw all these executive orders out the window immediately.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. I guess we need to do something, though.
We need to do something, yes. And it every single day, the insults and the damage get bigger and bigger from this guy. Who could possibly claim that America or that Obama operates in this in the self-interest of America?
Another slap in the face, huh?
Yep, and another prison shower experience from our commander in chief.
There you go. Okay.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, have a good day. All right. So this guy is Brandon Judd, and so Brandon says the Border Patrol's resources are most effectively focused on the border, prioritizing the apprehension and removal of individuals attempting to unlawfully enter the United States. Our removal numbers reflect that. Border Patrol agents are issuing notices to appear consistent with law, regulations, and department's enforcement policies. And he says the new policy makes, quote, makes mandatory the release without a notice to appear of any person arrested by the Border Patrol for being in the country illegally, as long as they do not have a previous felony arrest conviction, and as long as they claim to have been continuously in the United States since January of 2014. The operative word in the policy is claim. The policy does not require that the person approve they have been here, which is the same burden placed on them during deportation proceedings. Instead, it simply requires them to claim to have been here since 2014. And then he says, not only do we release these individuals that by law are subject to removal proceedings, we do it without any means of tracking their whereabouts. Agents believe this exploitable policy was set in place because the Department of Homeland Security was embarrassed at the sheer number of those who choose not to follow the law by showing up for their court appearances. In essence, we police people out of the shadows and into the light just to release them right back to those same shadows where they came from. The so-called Go Free policy has prompted thousands of people living below our border to cross the border, and among them are hundreds of criminal foot soldiers. And he says in one more statement, immigration laws today appear to be mere suggestions. There are little or no consequences for breaking the laws, and that fact is well known in other countries. If government agencies like DHS or CBP, the Border Patrol, are allowed to bypass Congress by legislating through policy, we might as well abolish our immigration laws altogether. Think about that. We ought to abolish our immigration laws because nobody is using them. And I've got a very long statement from this guy right here. Let's take a break. I'm going to see if I can find some of his testimony in front of Congress for you. We'll be right back. I'll try to find that for you. 726 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. If you were told by 7 years ago when the president was running for office, if you were told in his promotional material that one of his plans was to cancel the border law, would you have voted for him? We'll be right back. Thank you. All right, I found a couple of clips here from not a lot of. I can't believe there's not more posted, but this hearing just happened. Here's from Western Journalism. Border Patrol agents are being ordered to stand down by Obama administration.
Trey Gowdy and the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing Thursday about the Obama administration's inability to secure the southern border.
Secretary Johnson testified before the Appropriations Committee. The message we are sending to people crossing the border is you will be sent home. Either that message has not been communicated or it has not been received because the unlawful border crossings continue.
According to U.S. Border Patrol, the Obama administration is ordering the release of illegal immigrants, effectively allowing them to stay.
The willful failure to show up for court appearances by persons that were arrested and released by the Border Patrol has become an extreme embarrassment for the Department of Homeland Security. It has been so embarrassing that DHS and the U.S. Attorney's Office has come up with a new policy. Simply put, the new policy makes mandatory the release without an NTA of any person arrested by the Border Patrol for being in the country illegally, as long as they do not have a previous felony arrest conviction, and as long as they claim to have been continuously in the United States since January of 2014. The operative word in this policy is claim. The policy does not require the person to prove they've been here, which is the same burden placed on them during deportation proceedings. Instead, it simply requires them to claim to have been here since January of 2014. Not only do we release these individuals that by law are subject to removal proceedings, we do it without any means of tracking their whereabouts. In essence, we pull these persons out of the shadows and into the light just to release them right back to those same shadows from whence they came. Immigration laws today appear to be mere suggestions. There are little to no consequences for breaking the laws, and that fact is well known in other countries. If government agencies like DHS or CBP are allowed to bypass Congress by legislating through policy, we might as well abolish our immigration laws altogether. In the absence of consequences and enforceable laws, innocent people are hurt, criminals are rewarded, chaos abounds, and cartels reap huge financial benefits.
Are you concerned that the Border Patrol is being prevented from doing its job? Share and comment below.
All right, now here's a little bit more testimony from Brandon Judd. And this is from a couple of months ago.
Judd, you now recognize for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman Chafe. It's Ranking Member Cummings. In June, a CBP helicopter was shot and forced down in Laredo, Texas. To many in Washington, this was a wake-up call to the increasing violence on the Mexican border. Unfortunately, this was far from an isolated incident. For example, in 2014, less than 100 miles from the helicopter shooting, Border Patrol agent Javier Vega was murdered defending his family from two armed illegal immigrants while on a fishing trip. One of the murderers had been deported four times, the other twice, for illegally crossing the border. 20 years ago, and about the time I joined the Border Patrol, the Zetas, Sinaloa, Gulf, and Knights Templar cartels did not exist or were not widely known. Although narcotics and illegal immigrant smuggling were conducted by organized crime, it was not nearly on the level we see the cartels operating today. There were even relatively small-time players conducting smuggling operations within a given area of operations. Although violence could and did erupt, the older generation of smugglers took the long view. They would rather risk losing a load of narcotics to the Border Patrol than opening fire on agents. Violence brought unwanted attention on both sides of the border, and that was bad for business. This all began to unravel in the early 2000s with the emergence of the drug cartels. These cartels are well-organized, heavily armed, and pathologically violent. To give you a sense of the violence, the official death toll, as you quoted earlier, the official death toll from the cartel violence in Mexico is 60,000. This is more than the United States military lost in Vietnam. However, the unofficial death toll in Mexico is over 120,000 killed and another 27,000 missing and presumed dead. In Mexico, the cartels kill without hesitation or fear of prosecution. In May of this year, cartel members shot down a Mexican army helicopter in the state of Jalisco. Why would we expect them to behave any differently on the U.S.-Mexico border? The second factor driving the increased violence is the rise of criminal aliens. When I first started in the Border Patrol, if you were a citizen of Mexico,
We simply took down your information, took a single fingerprint, loaded you on a bus, and drove you to the border for repatriation. It was a revolving door border enforcement policy with cases where agents often arrested the same individual twice in the same shift. Three positive developments, however, changed this. The first was the change in the way we collected information. Instead of just capturing one fingerprint, we began taking the prints of all 10 fingers and running the prints of those arrested against all criminal databases kept in the United States Department of Justice. We were then able to identify with certainty criminal aliens attempting to reenter the United States or to identify those who were arrested during interior patrol activities. The second positive step was the implementation of the various consequence delivery systems used in certain places along the border. And the third was Immigration and Customs Enforcement's criminal deportation program. I want to be very clear on this, especially given the recent incendiary comments about who is crossing the border and the assertions that the border is far safer than it has ever been. In 2014, ICE deported 177,000 convicted criminals. Of this number, 91,000 were arrested by the Border Patrol trying to illegally re-enter this country. To put this figure in perspective, in 2014, the Border Patrol apprehended and arrested just under 500,000 illegal immigrants, meaning that one in every five arrests last year by the Border Patrol was a criminal alien. Almost 50% of the criminal aliens deported in 2014 were convicted of aggravated felonies. These charges include murder, rape, sexual assault of a child, and drug and weapons trafficking. These are not petty criminals, and approximately 60% of those deported last year had already been deported at least once before. This is the challenge we are facing at the border today. There are those who will point to lower apprehension rates and tell you the border is secure. Border Patrol agents, however, throughout this nation will tell you the border is not secure and the Southwest border certainly is not safe. We know what the problems are. What can we do to improve? First thing, increased manpower. Currently, there are 21,370 Border Patrol agents in this
country. Well, anyway, that is his testimony, and it's an extraordinary problem. You know, canceling the laws doesn't make us safer, even though the rate of crime may go down because there's less laws to break. It makes it a lot more dangerous, and now we've got all M is getting more and more established as more of these criminals cross the border from Central America, especially. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll get ready to talk to the GOP. How exciting. 738 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. 523 1450. We'll be back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, good morning, Kelly. This is Brandon Aragon from the House GOP. How are you doing today?
Good, Brandon. What's going on?
Oh, not much. I have Representative Zimmerman here on the line.
How exciting.
Yeah, it's a good morning. Hold on one second before I connect the representative.
All right.
All right, I'm going to put you on speaker real quick.
I'm going on the air right now.
Okay, sounds good. All right, we have Representative Zimmerman with us.
Well, we've got here a member of the GOP, and he's showing up to tell us what's going on up in the legislative session. Representative Zimmerman?
Yes.
How you doing today?
Well, it's a bright and early morning here in northern New Mexico and Santa Fe, the people's house.
Oh, fantastic. So you guys are, what, about halfway through the session?
That's right. We're maybe a little more than halfway through, but, things are progressing. We, as I said on the House Appropriation and Finance, we got the budget out. This week we'll be debating it probably Saturday morning, I think, and we'll get it over to the Senate, and they'll do their magic, and we'll get a balanced budget out. it's not good. You know, we're price of a barrel of oil for every dollar, it brings in about $10 million to the state coffers.
Wow.
So I'm not sure that that everybody knows that, but I think that's important for everybody. All citizens need to know that. I mean, it's good at the gas pump for us, but it's not good for the state coffers, for sure.
Well, we definitely, I think once again, it shows that we need to diversify our economy.
That's absolutely right. You know, we depend heavily on the oil and gas industry. And, you know, 36% or more of the revenue goes into supports our state budget. And so when you go from $60 a barrel down to less than $30 a barrel, you can do the math. That's over $300 million.
Well, what they say it might go down to $10. I mean, how could we as a state deal with that kind of depletion of revenue?
Well, and that's exactly what we're trying to deal with trying to do a budget, because we've become so heavily dependent upon all those revenues. And, you know, the good thing is that we have built up, you know, the rainy day fund or the capital reserves. You hear that sometimes from people. They're saying, oh, we need to tap this permanent fund.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why we don't want to tap the permanent fund, is because that kind of provides a little bit of buffer, and so we can able to balance our budget. It we have to do tight, or you know, the belt tightening all the time though.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm talking. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I wasn't sure you were still there.
I was listening intently with my jaw. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you good.
All right. Well, I mean, you called up to inform us. So what are on the sunny side? What is positive in this session?
Well, you know, there's a lot of positive legislation. We've already passed out of the House the driver license bill, HB 99. It went over to the Senate, and there was a lot of amendments to it. Over on the Senate side, which we expected, but you know, I think I think we'll reach agreement on it. It'll go into another committee, I think, on the end. It'll probably go to a conference committee, and there'll be some negotiations on it to make sure that we can provide a bill to the governor that is real ID compliant, and so we won't have to show a passport to get into one of the military installations or to get on a plane. And you know, that's really the goal right now.
Well, that sounds good.
That's one positive thing about the stuff we passed out of the House, the third grade retention. You know, so that's another issue I think that's important to folks back home. There's a world of issues out there. We're higher education. We had to sand that a little bit just to fund the advances in Medicare. I don't think a lot of people know that. I think there's somewhere around 975,000 people on Medicare in New Mexico. We only have a population of just a little over 2 million. And, you know, that really strains the state budget every year.
Well, I mean,
so those are some things that, you know, that we're dealing with up here in the people's house. I'm actually carrying a couple bills, one for for National Guard. It's just a way to say thank you to a lot of our members of our National Guard. They are constantly being mobilized to backfill troops that are deployed, in various places throughout the world. Another bill I'm carrying is one on DWI repeat offenders, and that hadn't come up yet before committee. But basically, when somebody is driving while intoxicated, and someone is killed, and then they're able to get good time if they're good. And then when they come out, if they do the same thing, then again, you know, they did it again, and you know, they may kill somebody else. And you know, we need to tighten up on our DWI laws. That's all there is to it. And we've had three DWI bills already passed out of the House yesterday, and they'll go on over to the Senate also for consideration. But those are some of the things, that issues and stuff that we're working on here in the People's House here in Santa Fe. I don't know if you have any questions you might want to ask me.
Well, can you hear me?
I do hear you.
I was going to say that would be my first question. Anything that you guys wanted to get through that didn't quite squeeze through this time that you're going to bring back?
Well, no, you know, at this point we're still hearing bills every day. And, so we're still very optimistic that, you know, that we have three really hot button issues. You know, the driver license issue, third grade retention. I think those are real top issues. The economy, how we can improve our economy, jobs. All of these are very important issues, and we have different House bills that are addressing all of these. You know, it's we can pass them out of the House, but if we don't get them out of the Senate, they never get to the governor to be signed.
Yeah.
So,
who's the Harry Reid in the Senate that's killing all the good bills?
Well, you know, I hate to name names.
Go
but,
ahead.
Maybe Senator Michael Sanchez.
We need to do a novena for him. The Catholics out there can pray for him. But I'm just kind of curious, is there anything we can do to get some of these people off social welfare? Because the less people on social welfare, the more people you have looking for work, the more qualified workers you have to build the economy. I mean, that's got to be one thing.
Well, you know, we need to get some good manufacturing jobs in New Mexico. And, you know, I think a good example of that is what we're doing down in southern Doñana County. In the Santa Teresa point of entry. And, you know, the governor has been real supportive of that, and she's made that a priority. We need to do that throughout the state wherever we can, and especially in some of our rural communities. You know, I represent part of Doñana County, Sierra, and Grant County, and we're heavily dependent, you know, in Grant County, for instance, on the mining industry. So if the economy's down, copper prices are down, there's a lot of unemployment. So we need to find a way to get our economy, you know, running a little more smoothly so that we're not affected by all the little bitty glitches.
Yeah, I
and,
agree.
If we can do that, I think that's really our goal. We'd be a lot more prosperous in our state of New Mexico.
I agree.
So those are issues that we're looking at, and we're trying to be more forward thinking as opposed to just kind of maintaining, because we've been maintaining for 104 years, and it's time that we move forward and start doing the things that are right to improve our economy in the state.
We need
so those are some things that they're big issues, hot button issues. You know, and we still have to work with the other side, the Senate. So, you know, we're not going to get everything that we want in the House, but we would hope that we can reach compromise and get good legislation to the governor so she can get it signed and we can move forward.
Well, we really appreciate the call and you working to help out New Mexicans.
Well, you know, it's a pleasure to be up here, and you know, I'm so appreciative to my constituents down in Las Cruces area, Doñana, Sierra, and Grant County. I can't say enough. I'm just honored to be their representative up here, and I intend to continue to do the people's will. I'm available all the time. They can call me on my cell phone. If I can't answer, they can text me, and I'll get back to them, because my cell phone is listed on the website, and I'll be glad to get back to them anytime.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, next time you're in town, let's get you in the studio.
That sounds like a plan, and I look forward to getting back there. We've got about another 15 or 20 days here, and we'll be back home. And, of course, then, you know, the campaign trail starts.
So I'll be out and about knocking doors, and I knock my own doors because I think it's important to talk to people and be available to them.
That sounds fantastic. Well, thanks a lot, and thanks for calling in, and have a great weekend.
You have a better weekend, and tell all your listening audience that just hang in there and pray for me.
Well, we will definitely keep you, put a note on the fridge to pray for you, but we appreciate you working for us.
Well, appreciate you. Thank you, and appreciate all the people down there in southern New Mexico.
Thank you, Rep, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, great.
Huh. Trying to get the rep off the line was like dealing with a Jehovah's Witness, but just kidding. No, we appreciate him calling in. Is a little, I found a new place for laughs, quick laughs, Rick Ramos. I think a little bit of Hispanic comedy. We'll check this out.
Not even a good Mexican. Look at me. I'm 31 years old. I don't have any kids. What kind of Mexican is that? Come on. I've been on unemployment. What Mexican has ever been on unemployment, huh? You can throw a Mexican a shovel. He'll start digging until someone pays him. You know how that works. Oh, we could go to Home Depot right now. There's 45 Mexicans waiting for it to open, you know? Man. You ever make the mistake of driving a pickup truck to Home Depot? You ever do that? Nuh-uh. Mexicans will mob your ass like Dawn of the Dead.
All right, so I'm trying to see what we can squeeze in here. That is kind of worrisome, though, isn't it? This oil going down, you kind of wonder if it'll go back up. I've got this report that I had told you that I would finish up the Muslim refugees that have been brought into the country. They're tying that into rape, a rape surge across the world, believe it or not. And so the article is named "So It Begins Here: U.S. City Overrun with Criminal Refugees," and they've done it to Amarillo, and they say it's just extraordinarily dangerous in Amarillo now. And now they're trying to do it to Montana. And that there was a lady that moved from Montana or from Amarillo to Montana, and what they say they're doing is they're using community organizers, moving them into small towns. And then they're using these people, they're bringing in a few refugees, kind of softening the population up, basically saying, see, there's no problem, there don't nothing to worry about. And they will start bringing in hundreds and thousands of these refugees, and they take over these small towns. And because they're from the third world, and because they just simply they don't have any exposure to our ideas of law and society, like things on rape. And I told you before, rape is almost cannot prosecute for rape under Sharia law because there has to be four witnesses and they have to agree, not just in general, but specifically they have to agree across the board to every detail. And if they don't, and how likely is it that a rape occurs and four people that are standing there watching who are opposed to it don't intervene? But if there's one disagreement between the testimony, the prosecution is turned around, the tables are turned, and the witnesses become they get prosecuted and given the same punishment as a rapist. So it's absolutely crazy. Anyway, have a great weekend. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, and I'll see you back in 2 days. Ciao.